irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron alongside Justin Nimmergood.
Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy almost tax season and almost time zone, spring forward. It's our last Monday before we spring forward.
It is. And Ronan, our guest, I think is ready for you to call to bring him on if you're able. So he did text back. So trying to get all of our points connected here today on the show. So okay. Hello. Literally trying him. All right. There you are. Jose?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, glad you made it on, man. You know, we'll just kind of roll with it. Good. Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Folks, we have Jose Santana with us. And Jose is a former director of the Designation Sentence Computation Center. The Federal Bureau of Prisons had a very, very high distinction there. We want to talk a little bit more today on, the federal, the First Step Act, federal prison reform. And so this is something near and dear to our hearts. And Justin's with us today, Jose. So he's anxious to learn about all this federal stuff. He's chomping at the bit.
Yeah, I got my notepad ready. And my pen ready here. So, pretend that I've never learned anything about this because I really haven't. I'm probably representative of your cohort audience out there. I'm just here to learn and take some notes. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say here today.
And Jose is always, he's kind of the silent co-host on those times that you're away or on assignment or whatever. So I would, Jose gets the ninth inning call, man, like, hey, man,
he's the perfect utility.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely my go-to number one off the bullpen, come out on the mound and get the show done. So, well, thanks for coming on the show today, Jose. And
glad to help and glad to be of assistance, Bruce, We're always here to help and answer the question the folks have. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Also, we sent out a little blast to the Facebook page. So, Ronan, we might be getting some outside callers. So if we do get any calls today, please put them through and we'll answer their questions. So as a recap, Jose and I have a business called federalprisonauthority.com and federalprisonauthority.com. .com is a service that is utilized by defendants, offenders, offender families, but I would say over half our work, we're retained by attorneys, criminal defense attorneys to assist with their defendant clients. Because what happens after a person is sentenced, they go into the hands of the Justice Department. They're considered, if you will, almost like the property of the Attorney General of the United States. And so that's it. And you leave the judicial branch and go into the hands of the executive branch. And that is a journey within itself. And a lot of offenders and offender families are now coming to recognize through the Second Chance Act what power the Federal Bureau of Prisons has to send inmates home early or get them more home confinement or transitional credit, or there's compassionate release programs, there's an elderly reduction in sentence program. So there's just a lot of mechanisms that the Justice Department can do on its own. So regardless of what the judge said at sentencing, because once it goes into the hands of the Justice Department, now it's in the hands of the Justice Department. And then the Justice Department has the authority, and the judge really doesn't have much authority as, you know, as it kind of plays out. It's kind of weird because you think the judge would always maintain all this authority throughout the person's journey, but not so much in the federal, in the federal world. So what do you have to add to that there, Jose? That was my little nickel abstract.
But. You're very much right on target, Bruce. You know, that's where the separation of powers of our democracy come into play. The like you very well said, the judicial branch and the executive branch are separate, and many times families and you know, just recently convicted individuals don't understand that the judge cannot obligate or mandate the Bureau of Prisons, for example, where to place an inmate, where to transfer an inmate, where what to do with an inmate. It's exclusively statutory given authority to the Bureau of Prisons of what they could do with an inmate. So once they pass on to the Attorney General, they become, like you very well said, you know, kind of under the custody, under the, subjected to the Attorney General's will and disposition, basically.
Right. And that's executed through the director of the Bureau of Prisons and down from that. So, and so all the time, you and I clarify questions. As a matter of fact, you and I, Jose, had a call with a possible incoming client about the expanded home confinement program for elderly. And how that individual, remember that individual was double calculating the first time back and double calculating. Yes. What was he doing? He was double calculating the good conduct time, or what was he doing?
Well, right. He was double dipping, like we call it, Bruce. So basically, you know, he had a 33-month sentence, white collar offender for bank fraud. And the individual was telling his loved one that he was calculating off the release date that the Bureau already had calculated, which was December 2021 release date. I'm not going to mention the specific date, but he took off the 54 days, which was about 11 months, give or take, from that sentence. It wasn't 11 months. He was miscalculating even the math. It was about almost 5 months of that sentence, 15%. So he was miscalculating the math. He was miscalculating the adjustment on the computation, which was he was taking off the 11 month out of his release date of 2021, which That's puts him good. About more or less at the end of this year, which was incorrect. So he was hoping he was going to get 6 months out of halfway house, too. So that was also incorrect, because that's not the right amount of time for a 33-month sentence, which was, you know, by the First Step Act, you could get up to 6 months difference from the Second Chance Act, which we can discuss later. So, he was getting his family's hopes up, and unfortunately, he was incorrect.
Yeah, and then the particular geographic region that he's releasing to, he's going to have to be, monitored under probably federal probation. But the good news is going directly to the house, but monitored under federal probation, which will have its own nuances and things to go through. But anyhow, that's just a moment in our lives, folks. You know, that's just one particular kind of case. So what Jose and I wanted to do was kind of, this is kind of our 2019 in review talk. talk about some of the cases we had worked with very successfully. And Jose, I didn't get you the list, but I typed it out for myself. So I'll be able to do some keywords, and I think you'll pick up on who it is. Yeah, almost. Here we go. So our first one, Ms. Santana, is the elderly gentleman that came to us and had a lot of medical concerns and had a sex offense background. So go ahead and give the overview on that, sir.
So it was particularly interesting. This case, elderly gentleman, 80 plus, late 80s, going to prison because of child abuse and exploitation, traditionally called child pornography, which is not the correct term, but child abuse, child exploitation. and he had some minor child engaging in sex in the computer. It was not a contact offense, right? And so he went to prison, was sentenced to prison, and he had a lot of medical issues. Of course, at that age, he was a care level 3, and actually, we assisted the family to get him to a medical facility here in the Metroplex, and he went there for his conditions. His conditions were stabilized, and he wasn't chronic anymore. They took him to outside hospital, stabilized his conditions and everything, gave him the proper medical care, and then we were able to successfully assist the family also to getting him to a general population facility, low security, close to the Metroplex, so the family could still go visit him and everything. And after that, he completed his almost at the end of his sentence, we were able to get release reentry center placement close by for this sex offender, which is traditionally was back in the day, it was unheard of that sex offenders would go to a release reentry center in the Metroplex. So it's a lot of the First Step Act things have changed the way cases are looked at, and we have been very successful in assisting families, and the Bureau of Prisons has really worked well with us and with the attorneys to get them to where we need. That was our first success case under the First Step Act.
Right. And on this particular case, with my sex offender training and psychological training, I did a risk assessment on him. The original guideline for him, because of the number of images, was around 327 months was the top of his guideline. And and he had a tough judge here in Eastern District, and we were able to get that down to double digit months based on the risk assessment. So that brought his guideline down, and the judge did at least decide to sentence him in the lower part of the range, and then everything else transpired, like you said there, Jose. So yeah, that was a good
case. And Bruce is being humble about it, but he really worked with that case on getting with the attorney and getting the people to understand the type of case it was and the needs of this offender, and getting them down to the lower part of the sentencing guidelines. So you did a fabulous job there, Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It doesn't happen often, but man, that was a great full service case from the assessment work all the way to the finish out with the placement and getting close to home. So fantastic work there. And again, man, that was a collaborative effort. And me and you were corresponding on that years ago, if you know what I mean. So at a distance. So that was amazing. Well, our next case is an interesting one from the East Coast. This is an individual around the Massachusetts area that went directly that through our efforts was to go from the federal prison directly into a home confinement center. Is that enough of a clue for this fellow?
Yes, Bruce. And okay. Interesting in that case is that he had a very short sentence. Very short sentence, which with the First Step Act also he was able to get that our assistance and review. That was part of one of the few first case that we were successful on, Bruce. On getting them halfway house and not halfway house, direct home confinement, direct electronic monitoring placement. And actually he was released a couple of months ago from everything. So he finished his sentence, very short sentence. The family wanted our assistance in getting him transferred. Remember that, Bruce, getting him transferred closer to the upper northeast. Based on his short sentence, he wasn't going to be transferred. We were successful in getting him reviewed for direct home confinement. So that was a very good case on a very short time.
Right. So here we have an offender with a short sentence actually gets some First Step Act benefit from that and then gets a direct home confinement placement, man. He goes straight to his house. Unbelievable. Yes. So this case is fairly unbelievable in that. The first case was a sex offender getting all these benefits. Excuse me. And then now this case being a short timer, getting a direct home confinement thing. And folks, don't think if you're listening to this program, don't think that's going to happen to your loved one, because that just happens to be he released to an area of the Northeast that had a direct home confinement contract in play. If you're in Moline, Illinois, or Cornfield, Iowa, or Laramie, Wyoming, that ain't gonna happen. You know what I mean? but where this guy happened to live, he was able to access those services that was right in place. And again, Jose, that one's a big win for you. Riding herd and keeping that dream alive. So good job there. Well, our next one is this was interesting. I think this is one of our quickest cases. I was in Southern California, Laguna Beach, and then I was calling you on the phone, and this individual was slated to go to an institution that wasn't necessarily the best fit, but that thing you helped get that thing turned around to a good institution here in Southern Texas, if you know what I mean. Is that enough of a clue word?
Yes, that case was the individual that was serving a pretty lengthy sentence, had already served 10 years on the sentence, and he was being transferred from a low security to a minimum security facility. What happened was he was, the family contacted us, the attorney contacted us and said, hey, they're sending him somewhere else, further away. He's been 10 years away from the family. Can you guys assist us in trying to get him closer so he could have visiting? And so we did. We looked at it and we said, let's see what we could do. We contacted individuals that we work with us, and they reviewed the case and they said, you know, you're right, and we should give them a consideration to that. And luckily, there was available bed space in this facility, and we happened to send them to a minimum security facility in South Texas. So it was a quick turnaround. It was almost the weekend, and we were able to just turn around that individual. Luckily, we were able to because he wasn't moved. He was still at the parent facility designated, mm-hmm. but not yet on movement. So we were able to have the case reviewed, and everything was in place policy-wise for them to review the case and send them to another minimum security facility closer for his family, even though it was going to be still probably maybe a few hour drive, 2 to 3 hour drive for the family, but it was closer than the alternative in Mississippi.
you gave that away, but okay. Months ending in November, Alex. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, good stuff there. And that was a good thing. You know, folks, a lot of times as consultants, we know what to do because we're the armchair quarterbacks. And of course, we were the system. And so, you know, we lead the horse to water. You know what I mean? You like that. Justin's laughing, man. He's like, you like the armchair quarterback thing? Yeah, he's feeling that. He's feeling it. And it's true. We're sitting here in the ivory tower with the jeweler's glass. Like, this is what should happen. And that's why we are retained by attorneys and whatever else. And so we were able to alert the appropriate decision makers in a very timely fashion. And they got it done within hours. And if you had gone with some sort of post-conviction attorney or some, God forbid, ex-convict, shit would never happen.
Yeah.
Bottom line, he'd be getting his ass beat in a medium or whatever. So, all right then. Very good, sir. Very good. Let me depart from our order. Let's change to another popular, the CPAP person, the CPAP. Want to talk about him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The individual was a white-collar offender, received a 30-month sentence, and first-time offender. He was going to go to a minimum security facility. Camp facility. The thing about it was his medical challenges. He told me like he was like the $6 million man, his bionic. They had just inserted him one of the newer mechanisms for CPAP, which was electronically controlled by a little remote that activated the CPAP function when he went to sleep. So he was asking us. I don't know if you remember the particulars, Bruce, but he was asking us if we could send him to a facility that could accept that type of mechanism. No way. The Bureau is not that that up to speed on the electronic medical devices. And so we got him to a care level 3 facility, but at a minimum security facility with the assistance of the folks that reviewed the case appropriately. And he took the mechanisms and the machine and everything else with him, but it wasn't he wasn't able. I found out through his attorney that he wasn't able to use that type of device.
Did we go through ONDT on that? We were able to go through regular designation channels or whatever. Was that? Do we have to consult?
No, ONDT. ONDT review the case, because if you remember that case, Bruce, the judge had adamantly and strongly worded the recommendation and the judgment and commitment, saying a facility that provides for his CPAP machine requirements. But you know, the bureau could provide CPAP machines, and they inmates do have CPAP machines, but not up to like the $6 million man.
All righty then. So I was doing a little behind the scenes telling Justin what OMDT is. You want to share with our listeners what OMDT means, Jose?
The Office of Medical Designations and Transportation, man. Just so you get a feel for any case that goes to federal prison is reviewed for medical needs. And for medical care levels, there's a care level system, which it's provided by a medical calculator, which assigns numbers. The inmate's conditions give them a number. So care level 1 would be an Arnold Schwarzenegger, a healthy individual. Care level 2 would be a guy like a normal guy who has controlled diabetes or control
diabetes,
blood pressure. Yeah. Well, care level 3 would be a more chronic care. And care level 4, if the individual is outside in the free world, they would be in a hospital, hospitalized, or requiring continuous assistance with daily living functions. That would be a care level 4. So the Designation and Sentence Computation Center, which is the DSCC, will designate the place of confinement for care level 1s and 2s. Care level 3s and 4s will be the Office of Medical Designation and Transportation, OMDT. So they classified initially, they'll go to that OMDT office and they will review it. But this guy was a care level 3. He was originally he was a care level 3 because of his condition. But once reviewed by the Office of Medical Designation, OMDT, it came down to be a care level 2. So he went to where we advocated for his review and placement, and he's happy where he's at.
Yeah, and so for our listeners and possible customers and attorneys and beyond, if you do have a client that you're giving us, and that client has a significant medical condition, it's going to require that extra step of us consulting with our medical experts, possibly, and then looking through the lens of the OMDT team, because it's a little bit different paradigm how we look at those things. But because basically, you know, care level 3s and 4s are specialized cases, so it takes more effort.
Correct.
All right. Very good. Let's go with our next case. Very exotic. Yes, it's very exotic.
Exotic women.
Yeah, well. This is exotic. It's not in that respect at all, but it's exotic in that it involves attorneys from various countries, at least 3 that I can think of. And, you know, this person.
Yeah.
Is that enough of a clue there for you there?
Okay. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, go ahead and explain this case to our listeners, Jose. You're best suited for this
one. This case is interesting in the fact that it goes to deal with the cases of terrorism. This individual was sentenced a plea agreement. If he would have went to trial, he probably would have gotten life in prison. It involved that he was supposedly funneling money or supporting terroristic activities. He was a successful businessman internationally. Multi-million dollars, it went up to the billions, and the individual had some medical issues, which the attorneys abroad and the attorneys from the U.S. wanted him to go to a medical facility. in the mid-Atlantic part of the country, and they wanted him to get medical attention. So the case comes to us, and for that specific reason, and we looked at the case and classified him, but he was going to be placed in a higher facility based on the sophistications and the classifications of security on this case. And we were able to get the proper authorities reviewed. The individual had already, he's not a U.S. citizen, born abroad. And so he was going to be placed in a higher security base because he was not a non-U.S. citizen and the particular security matters that concerned the case of the monetary quantities involved there. So we got him to not the medical facility because he didn't meet the requirements of a care level 3, like we explained before. So he was considered a care level 2 medically and a care level 1 for mental health. He had no mental health issues. And so we were able to get the case review and assist him in getting placed in a facility which was appropriate for his range in security. They didn't give him an enhanced security management placement because we were able to have the decision makers review the case, and they agree with us that this guy didn't surface to that extreme security measures. And so he was placed in a facility commensurate with his appropriate security, just one level less of the enhancement, and he is doing his sentence there. And for the most part, he's okay. We got him to see them, the facility there, see his medical needs. And actually, he was taken out to the community hospitals there and reviewed, and he's getting the appropriate medical care that the Bureau could provide, even in the community hospital. So that was a very successful case, very involved, very, very challenging, very sophisticated case.
Very, yeah, you're right. And that is just, Jose, you just did the great heavy lifting on that one, particularly the interagency aspect of this, different countries involved, different sets of attorneys involved, different countries, different cultures. You know, it's a multicultural thing. So, that was a great case. And
what were you gonna say? Actually, Bruce, I don't know if you remember that we also were contacted because he was arrested abroad by the federal task force team in the country abroad, and he was detained for some time there, and he wasn't getting the jail credit for that. To get the case reviewed, and they assisted us, and they assisted, and he got the credit. Actually, the letter which references his detention and the time he was detained abroad was written in Arabic, and we had to translate it. It was translated by a certified translator, and we had to submit those documents to the Bureau of Prisons, the designation center, computation center. They got to review it. It took him several months, but he got the credit for that. So That was an excellent coordination among us and the attorneys.
Yeah, good save there. Yeah, I remember that, and that was a wonderful thing. You know, we took this piece by piece. You know, this case is very complex, and so thank God we had the wisdom and discernment to write retainer agreements for each piece. You know what I mean? And that way we could track the work, and it keeps us accountable. And it shows to them, hey, this is done. We're moving on to the next issue, next retainer. And so awesome job there, Jose. And we'll continue to monitor that. Since we're on the topic of, let's say, non-U.S. citizens, let's pick one more non-U.S. citizen. We don't have anybody from Spain, Justin. Justin wants a Spaniard, but we're fresh out of those today. Oh, he wants to hear the Castilian lisp or something. Well, Jose's Puerto Rican, so we can.
Oh, he's Puerto Rican. Yes, well, Jose, if you know anything about the Catalan Ba, that would be of interest.
You know anything about that?
Of which one?
Catalan.
the Catalan law, like the Castilian.
Catalan, law, Catalan, the Catalunya.
Catalan, Catalan. Lo siento.
Catalan.
Lo siento.
Sí.
All right.
Catalan.
Good enough.
Catalanes.
All right. Well, our next case on our show today is an individual that had a separatee. They weren't a U.S. They were not a U.S. citizen, and albeit in the country a long time, and their separatee. Unwittingly, we found out in the beginning, thank God we were hired in the beginning, we found out that they were designated to the same place that their co-defendant was going, and that wasn't a good thing. You know who I'm talking about? Okay, absolutely. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish that one.
So these individuals were sentenced. They both pled guilty separately. They were both lined up to testify against each other. And so they were both cases were lined up, one to testify against the other, and the conspiracy and the kickbacks for health services and health providers, healthcare providers, and they didn't get to testify against each other. But one of them is designated first to a facility in the southeast of Texas. And the other one ended up being designated to the same place. And so the attorney didn't know that this was happening, but the fact that the family got involved and the individual got involved and called us and provided the information, we were able to reach out to our contacts in the Bureau, provide the information, verify the information, and get them designated, get our client designated elsewhere, because if not, it would have been ugly. It would have provided a safety and security issue for those inmates, for the staff involved, and consequently one of them was going to be transferred and put in a bus and detained somewhere and go from location to location from the special housing unit in that facility, probably through Oklahoma City, wait for there for another bus or a plane to get out to the designated place of confinement. We were able to avoid all that by making several calls and contacting our individuals and providing the correct information. The attorney didn't know what to do. If you remember, Bruce, when we talked to him, he said, I don't know what to do. I'm on a loss of what to do. I said, well, we got this. That's why we were retained, and we got this and we took care of it. Even afterwards, he got involved with the prosecutor, provided a letter, and corroborated our statement, but they were already designated elsewhere. So,
yeah, I mean, can you imagine? Yeah, you're this otherwise white-collar offender, you know, thinking you're going to report to a minimum security institution, but yet your co-defense there, and next thing you know, man, you're in shackles and chains. Like you said, man, you might as well be a medium or whatever, right? You're going here, you're going right there. You're going to be on the chain gang, I'm on the bus, be smelling diesel, going to Oklahoma City, you know, making a run there and be just, I mean, what? So we spared that individual pretty much a horrendous experience of Corrections 101 with U.S. Marshals, buses, planes, and then being sent wherever in automobiles, right? So, and it's at that moment the BOP can say, hey, we got to keep our institution safe. And so if we have a bed for you in Safford, Arizona, or whatever, you know, Lompoc, then that's where you're right. going, even though it's more than 500 miles. So, but luckily this individual was quickly redesignated to a place close to his home and is living happily ever after. Folks, and again, just make sure all this stuff is all past tense. So, you know, don't be trying to piece our stories together and start Googling newspaper articles, because we're still obscuring the innocent here, or the guilty, as the case may be. All righty then. Right. So we had
on that case, mm-hmm. Bruce. This we're talking about a medical doctor, a doctor in medicine. Right. He wasn't used to, you know, this type of going to prison stuff, you know. First time ever going, getting in trouble, and we spare him a lot of the pains and tribulations.
Anguish.
Yeah.
Mental suffering.
Like,
pain and suffering and mental anguish. Yeah, personal injury stuff that he was spared. All righty then, real quick, I think our last non-citizen case of the day we'll talk about is an individual who, I think it was a hybrid sentence. It was 6 months in BOP and 6 months possibly in home confinement. But and this again, this person was kind of blind to the fact that, hey, if you're not a U.S. citizen and if other things aren't taken care of, once the Federal Bureau of Prisons gets you, you're going to be treated like a non-U.S. citizen. Talk a little bit about that, because this individual is possibly slated to go to a ICE Immigration Custom Enforcement facility, possibly on the Canadian border, had we not jumped in there. You want to talk about that case a little bit?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
accurate. 6 month sentence for prison, 6 month sentence for home detention. The individual was a professional, actually, in the technological world, and his case was a misdemeanor, Bruce, if you remember. He accessed unauthorized IT system. And so he was it was a misdemeanor. It wasn't even a felony. And so this guy was a permanent resident alien with a green card. He wasn't illegal in the country. He was permanently a resident alien with a green card. And regardless of the status, if you are not a U.S. citizen or naturalized citizen, you are going to be reviewed by ICE when you come to the custody of the Attorney General for service of a sentence under the Federal Bureau of Prisons. You will be reviewed by ICE regardless of that. So that was the issue. The individual thought he was going to go to a minimum security facility, and that was not the case on this event. So, but we were able to avoid again the pain, mental anguish, and the family separation. And we kept them. We were able to contact our individuals and get the case reviewed for placement in a facility here in Texas, because the family is in Texas.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just another extremely happy customer, and their family is grateful that they're able to have their loved one nearby. Well, let's kind of turn our attention to individuals that get in trouble while they're in federal prison. One of my favorites is an individual who is probably at one of the best minimum security club-fed joints known to man in the Florida area. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Jose. Right?
Right.
And this person
right.
And this person had racked up some pretty serious incident reports for possession of contraband, and this guy could have got sent to the furthest reaches of China or whatever because of disciplinary issues. So if you want, jump in and kind of tell our listeners about that case.
Right. He was going to go to somewhere where there was best base, and it wasn't in Florida, that's for sure. And he was going to go to another part of the country because he had a 2038 release date. You know, even though he was at Club Fed there and whatnot. So the issue here is 2028 release date. I'm sorry, 2028. And so the issue here was he got into incident reports, disciplinary conduct, and not only once, twice for the same issue. And we could have saved them if it would have been once, but just the second time is too much for a minimum security facility. And so we got him to go to a low security facility and kept him in the great state of Florida, where his family could go visit him just a few hours away, drive from where they lived, and the individual was placed because of our assistance getting the case review at the proper time, because it was a matter of time that he had already been looked at. The case had already been looked at and being considered to be placed away. And so we were able to intervene promptly, expeditiously, and they appropriately put him in a place at least close to the family where the family could go drive and visit him.
Yeah, another extremely happy family. We saved the day there again as well. Well, let's look at an old law case. Yeah, they're, believe it or not, mm-hmm. right? There's the old law parole cases, and this is a gentleman that I guess was kind of missing in action, right? And then was let's talk about him if you know what I'm talking about.
Well, and just to kind of explain a little bit of the old law, new law, and bottom line is old law cases are anyone who went to prison before October 31st, 1987, which was the old law parolable case. Starting November 1st, 1987 was the new law, which eliminated parole for all federal offenses, which was the statutory crime reform. So that's the difference. So this guy was old law because he committed this crime before October 31st, 1987, way before that. It was a drug offense, and the fact was that this guy was on at large for absconded from supervision and didn't surrender himself to serve his time. And he was out at large for 10 years. For 10 years, he was not serving his sentence. So we got consulted by the attorneys, and the attorneys didn't understand how to navigate the old law cases. We were able to do an assessment, classify him according to the salient factors of the old law, which gives him point system. And we did a preliminary classification, and we explained to the attorneys what to expect during the hearing and what the parole situation was going to be. And so it went right on point, and they reviewed the case, and actually they didn't really enhance any of his past behavior of absconding from supervision, because he was an elderly gentleman. He had not committed any more crimes since then, and so we got him to stay where he was, and actually here maybe in 2 or 3 more months he'll be considered for revision and possibly transferred closer to where he wants to relocate to in the great state of Florida. So another successful case of our review and assisting attorneys and loved ones to understand the system, which all law doesn't. There's when I left the Federal Bureau of Prisons December of 2017, there was only 500 old law cases in the whole Bureau of Prisons. Right.
And with us being the age we are in our collective nearly 60 years of correctional BOP experience collectively, you know what I mean? We remember these old law cases and these interim hearings, and it was just a blessing to be able to help that family out with our knowledge of what the parole commission has dwindled down into and what we can do moving forward. I know we have a few minutes left, and last case is a case that was referred to me in the beginning through the community. The individual was part of a 20 person-ish case on various levels of fraud. The person came to me for an assessment. They did qualify and for the RDAP program, but moving forward, this individual retained us to do help with the PSR, the pre-sentence report, and this person's attorney actually being a former federal prosecutor. The very, very great collaborative experience we had working with the private attorney, who really allowed us to take the lead in many respects on the social aspects of the case, and of course now the custody of the case. But as a matter of fact, when the pre-sentence report was being conducted, you and I were sitting at the grill, and the attorney was actually sitting on the floor with his legs crossed with a legal pad taking notes, because we didn't have much room in this jail cell that we were all stuffed into. And we were able to get this case written up correctly, and Jose, what kind of chime in about this case? This is a kind of an all-star case for us. Go ahead.
Absolutely. This is a white-collar medical fraud case, which was the individual was going to receive a sentence of 60 months. The thing about it was, interesting fact was that he had been in custody for over almost 2 years in pretrial custody, because he was under pretrial services and committed another offense while he was on pretrial services. And so they took him in custody, and by the time he got sentenced, and his computation still haven't been done, Bruce. And so he is short. I mean, you have to have at least more or less 36 months remaining to serve in order to get you to a residential drug abuse program, the RDAP program, which gives inmates up to 1 year off their sentence if they complete that RDAP program. Plus, they get 6 more months in halfway house and transitional services in the community. So the time was at the essence on this case, and actually he was going to be designated to a facility that had no RDAP. And we were able to get our contacts, review the case, check the case, and look at it, and appropriately designate him to an RDAP site. So this was a stellar case where communication was vital between the attorney, the inmates, and actually the Bureau of Prisons did a very, very good job in looking at the case and determining that, because he was designated to a place that had no RDAP. And then we got him to review the case based on the merits of it and his qualifications to get him to an RDAP site. So that was a success all the way around.
Yeah, huge success, because then we were able to contact the individual and say, hey, wait a minute, look at the judgment commitment order, look at page such and such of the pre-sentence report. He qualifies for the RDAP. He needs an RDAP interview immediately. He needs to be placed in a prison close to his home, etc. And it worked out just perfectly. And then, you know, as a personal aside, you know, the inmate would never, you know, like, okay, this is going to happen. Just have trust in us. And well, the inmate rumor is this, and this person said that, and the unit secretary said this, and the case manager said that. And I was about ready just to, you know, completely disown this guy. But of course, what we said did come true, as it always does. And, you know, so again, folks, you can't rely on inmate.com and BS and rumors and all this other stuff. You got to rely on the experts who, you know, anyway, that kind of knows how this works. Well, we're inside 2 minutes, Jose, man. Thanks for coming on the show today. That was a pretty good smattering of some of the successful cases we had cleared for last fiscal year. So, man, and there's many more, by the way, folks. And there's like three more we didn't get to even for that, and many more and beyond. With just extra halfway house placements, extra months of halfway house, and then other miracles with people that get in trouble with the DHO or gang related issues, stuff like that. But we don't have time for that today. But man, thanks for coming on the show, and feel free to see our page at federalprisonauthority.com, and there's a little subpage, Who We Are. And you click that, that brings up Jose's picture and his bio and his stellar training and experience. And, you know, Jose's very humble as well. He's trained as an attorney, but we are prison consultants. We don't practice law. We practice prison consulting. And although there's a lot of law involved, isn't it? Isn't that right, Jose?
Oh, absolutely. And it's federal. You know, we get a lot of, we get some calls and issues from state. A state family that has loved ones in state prisons, but always practices federal prison consulting. So feel free to ask any questions. It would be interesting to have a Q&A section, Bruce, with your Facebook group, and have some questions.
We'll do a Facebook Live and some other stuff. You're right, Jose. Thank you. And again, Good save, brother. Yeah, come to our Facebook page at Federal Prison Authority. No, excuse me, First Step Act Federal Prison Reform. First Step Act Federal Prison Reform. Our email and Jose's email is federalprisonauthoritybop@gmail.com. And you can reach us if you're interested in federal prison consulting services, or you have a question about your loved one in federal prison, because it's a maze. It's a labyrinth. And even the First Step Act is just a huge maze of its own. And it takes a village to navigate through us. So don't do it alone. Retain us to help you. We're the gift that keeps on giving. So, all right, Mr. Santana, well, good to have you on the show. We'll bring you on here in a few weeks. Folks, thank you very much for listening to another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. You can reach us on our social platforms, the Concierge Coaches on Instagram, LinkedIn, Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I can be reached in the coaching capacity at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks?
Nimmergood.com, or you can try me at coaching@nimmergood.com as well.
Ooh, getting fancy. Okay. Got another one going. coaching@nimmergood.com. All right, folks. Well, until the next time, have a blessed week, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Bruce.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.